once again, welcome as we have yet another opportunity that we have been blessed with to assemble together on this beautiful Lord's Day. Freedoms that we cherish, freedoms that we ought not to ever take for granted, and we ought to be thankful for these, and we ought to use them in such a way that they will build us up spiritually, and as we have opportunity that perhaps we might be able to be a blessing to others and be able to be an encouragement to others, to lead them to Christ and to do that which is right. If you have your outlines this evening, you will note that we are going to be continuing a study dealing with the subject of the Christian and money. That is, what does the Bible say about the subject of money where the Christian is concerned? And as you can see, we've been studying this throughout this year, and this is the 9th or 10th lesson in this particular study. It is actually pretty interesting how much the Bible actually says. There's well over 1,000 verses in the Bible that deal with the subject of money and the way that we are to manage the resources that we have been entrusted with. And of course, that's because we live in a world where, whether we like it or not, we need money. We need resources with which to live, with which to manage ourselves within society. But as Christians, we have to be very careful to make sure that we do not let that which we have control us, but rather that we live managing it, realizing that we are stewards where God is concerned. And we've spent considerable time addressing various principles associated with what the Bible says about money. We've established how we are actually stewards with what we have. And as such, we will give an accounting one day to God for the way that we have managed that which actually is not ours. Actually, what we have belongs to God, and we need to keep that in mind. In addition to that, we've looked at other passages such as Matthew chapter 5, verses 9, or 6, verses 19 through 21, where Jesus talks about do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. I want us to keep that in mind as we give consideration to what we are talking about in our lesson this evening. We have also been addressing some practical applications in dealing with the way that we use that which we have been entrusted with. We've talked about the importance of sharing with others. And in our last lesson, we talked about the subject of debt and what the Bible has to say about credit and debt. And I hope that we would think about those things. In our lesson this evening, we're going to talk about what the Bible says about savings and investing. And you might ask the question, you know, should we as Christians be saving? And while that sounds like a weird question, and some would say, obviously we should, you know, there are those that when it comes to the question of investments and when there comes to the questions of savings, they ask whether or not when one does that and to what degree that they do that, are they demonstrating a greater trust in the things of this world than they are of God? So it is a subject that we need to give consideration to. And another reason that we need to give consideration to this is we are living in a very materialistic society. And more people in this society live as if they are entitled to more and more stuff, usually at the expense of someone else. It is no secret that this nation, and this nation is not alone, has become very, very wasteful. We are not saving as a nation at all. We're acting irresponsibly, wasting more than what we have. And as a result of that, many of the individuals within this country are following the example of our governments. And they too are living wastefully, living borrowing more than they have, and failing to give any consideration for the consequences of what they do today and the way they use the resources that they have today, not looking toward whether there will even be a tomorrow. And so the subject of saving is something that we need to certainly give great attention to. As I understand it, you look at statistics, the percentage of savings that is taking place now in personal homes is lower than it has been in many times past. And so it is a subject of great concern. But what we want to know is what does the Bible say about this subject? Does the Bible have anything to say about the subject of savings? So let's take a few moments and look at some of these things. There are a few passages that I want us to begin with. And a couple of these are in the book of Proverbs. And of course, when you look at the book of Proverbs, remember that you have Solomon, who was given wisdom from God, and he is making observations that apply to life. These are principles that have physical application, and in many instances there might even be spiritual applications as well if you make it that way. In Proverbs 21 and verse number 20, Solomon there says, "There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it." You'll notice in that description there that Solomon observes that the wise man is one who has enough oil not just for today, but he has oil for tomorrow as well. He's prepared and he's taken measures. He has saved up so that if something happens, he is able to take care of himself. In Proverbs chapter 6 verses 6 through 8 where Solomon is dealing with laziness, he's dealing with the sluggard, the one who is wasteful in the way that he lives his life. He says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a plower, or like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." Solomon observes that you need to take measures to make sure that you don't find yourself tomorrow without anything. And he gives the example of the ant. You know, little creatures that you can learn great things from. How in summer, when the food is plentiful, they will constantly be gathering, storing up, so that when the winter time comes and the resources are not there, they have enough to live on. And that gives an example of what we're talking about when we think of savings. You might also consider the example of Genesis chapter 41 verses 25 through 57. This is the example of Joseph. You remember that Joseph, when he was sold into Egypt, went to the house of Potiphar. Eventually he ended up in jail. You know, he ended up in the dungeon in prison because of a false accusation of Potiphar's wife. Of course, that leads to Joseph interpreting dreams. And eventually, as a result of that, Joseph interprets the dreams of Pharaoh. And you might recall that those dreams had to do with what was in store for Egypt. There was going to be 7 years of great prosperity followed by 7 years of great famine throughout the world. And as Joseph interprets these dreams for Pharaoh, he gives Pharaoh advice to do what? He said, "You're going to have some good time for the next 7 years. And after that, you're going to have some bad times." I didn't say not so good times. You're going to have some bad times, some terrible times. But you can get through that if during the good times, you will save up and prepare for what is ahead. That's an example of saving. Now, all the advice that he gives and the overall results, there was materialism associated with that. But the principle of looking ahead and making provision so that you're prepared if something happens tomorrow is a good thing. In Matthew chapter 25, going to the New Testament, in the parable of the talents, you remember the wicked servant whom the master rebukes. You know, the master goes on a journey. He's given the three servants talents according to their ability. 1 5, 1 2, 1 1. One talent. And when he comes back, the first two had faithfully doubled that which they had. The third one, he went and buried it in the ground. And what was the response of the master there? "You wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest." Now, it's kind of interesting when you look at that, and I like this passage as it discusses the subject of savings, because what it demonstrates is savings is good, but it's not as good as hard work. But yet it's better than laziness. It's better than being a slothful, squandering individual that does nothing. So he's indicating there that savings can be good. And it is a good thing to give consideration to that. And that's what the master told him. At least I would have received interest on my resources. Think about investing when you look at that particular statement there. So you find in the Bible, there are examples that deal with the subject of giving. And in addition to that, there's numerous other principles and commands and instructions that we give that would imply that savings is a good thing. As Christians, we are commanded to give. As Christians, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, we are to lay by in store. What's that mean? Means you save, right? Lay by in store as we have prospered. Now this is addressing brethren saving up for the first day of the week so that they can give to the Lord's church. And in future lessons we're going to begin talking about the responsibilities of the Lord's church and giving as Christians where the Lord's church is concerned. But you have there the indication of saving up. And you also have that Paul is writing to Corinth telling them to take up this collection so that when he comes, several months down the road, this collection will be there. Savings. Savings taking place. You have that as the example. Also, you have Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse number 28. In Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse number 28, Paul there gives instructions, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, he says there. Let him labor with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. He talks there about how you work, and by working you're able to provide for yourself, and hopefully you'll have a little bit left, hopefully you'll have a little bit saved up, so when somebody else has a need, you're able to help them with that need. Now, while these examples don't specifically say you shall save, the implication is that by saving you are better enabled to do these things. We're better enabled to do good works and to be able to help those who need assistance if we have taken the time to be responsible and save a little bit. Furthermore, in our last lesson, when we warned about debt and we talked about the dangers of debt and various things associated with that, the dangers of debt imply taking measures to prevent debt. We all have emergencies that come up. What's the way to prevent debt when an emergency arises? We sometimes call it a nest egg. You know, you have a little bit set aside. You have something saved so that you can prevent that. So as we can see, there's numerous things to think about when you deal with the subject of savings, and you can find that everything points toward it is a good thing that we ought to be involved in. Think about how saving prevents stress in one's life. It can prevent you from being stressed when you do have to deal with those emergencies and things that come on. It prevents distractions because you are able to deal with a circumstance now and you can take care of it because you have the resources to do that and the frustrations. And then there's the idea not being an undue burden to somebody else. Think about that. You know, those who are irresponsible and squander their resources, then something comes along, they go to their brethren and they expect their brethren to bail them out. Now, you know, if somebody has a legitimate need, we as brethren ought to be there for one another and willing to step up and help one another. But what if you've got somebody that's irresponsible? What if you've got somebody that refuses to heed the advice of those who have tried to put them on the right path and help them to gain control and to quit being wasteful with their resources. They become a burden, and to help that individual requires resources to be taken away from what you might describe as a legitimate need. So you put all those principles together, you can see the idea of savings as being biblical. However, here's the caveat. There are principles that we need to give consideration to when we think about the subjects of savings, investments, retirement, and various other types of things. I ask the question, can savings be abused? Is it possible to save for ungodly reasons and in ungodly ways? Is it possible to have ungodly attitudes which are prompting you to save? That's just something for every one of us to actually think about. And there are some that contend that when you talk about especially investments and retirement, that it shows us lack of faith or trust in God and more trust in the material things of this world. And it's because of this that we're looking at these things. But I want us to understand that while there can be virtue in saving, there can also be abuses. There's also wrong motives for saving. What about somebody who hoards? You ever heard of hoarding? In this media age, we've become more aware of that because there's television programs actually devoted to the subject of those who hoard. And the idea of hoarding is they won't throw anything away. They won't give anything. They won't do anything. They just take and take and take, and their house is a wreck. Their house is a disaster area because they won't even throw away a wrapper to a piece of trash. That's hoarding. Now that's somebody that's saving. But let me tell you, is that person being responsible? Or is that somebody that is clinging to the things of this world? And they won't let go of even the smallest of their possessions. What about paranoia? You know, one of the things that really gets me is on a... I have a Sam's Club membership, and I've got a couple of emails for disaster preparedness. You know, and what I mean by that is you've got these $2,000 and $3,000 packets that have enough food in cans to help a family of four survive for a year. You know, it's all the dried stuff, the dehydrated cans, can after can of rice and all that stuff. Saving up for the impending disaster, because after all, on December 21st, the Mayan calendar is going to end, and that's supposed to be disaster. You know, Y2K, what was that, 12 years ago now? Remember how we were supposed to have a meltdown? And people would save up everything, panicking. How many people are there that their savings are because they're afraid of some end-of-the-world disaster or whatever they describe it? Of course, they don't really believe it's the end of the world from God's standpoint. They just want to be able to survive the Holocaust. And so they hoard, or in paranoia, they hold everything for themselves. Does that show a trust in God? You know, so if you talk about savings from that standpoint, you know, maybe it's something to stand back and think about for a moment. You know, as in everything that we do, we need to ask the question, why am I doing it? So let's ask the question, why should I save? Why am I saving what I am saving? Is it possible that saving can be taken overboard? Is the reason I'm saving because I'm stingy? Is the reason that I'm saving because I love money? And I want as much of it as I can possibly get my hands on? What does 1 Timothy 6 and verse number 10 say? The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And in 1 Timothy chapter 10 verses 17 and 18, instructions are given there to the rich. And we've discussed these passages before. Paul gives instructions there to command those who are rich in this present age not to trust in uncertain riches. Don't save up because money is your ticket to life. He says, don't trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. Are there people who in their savings, they refuse to share with those who really have needs? Are there those who are thinking just about themselves? And when a legitimate need comes along, even though they have a huge bank account, they're unwilling to share with others. We got a principal issue there, don't we? So it's possible to save with an ungodly motive. We need to, as we consider, as we save, we need to think of it from a biblical standpoint. Am I being pleasing to God? In Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, you have there a parable where Jesus is in the midst of his teaching and some individuals come up to him and a man comes up from the crowd and says to Jesus, Teacher, tell my brother to divide his inheritance with me. Tell my brother he has to split his money with me. And what was the response of the Lord? Man, who made me an arbiter of these types of things? And he proceeds to tell the story of what we describe as, or the parable of the rich fool. You know, here was a man who prospered abundantly. He had such a good year that he had more crops than he had the place to store them. So what was his answer? Rather than saying, you know what, I ought to help people. God has so abundantly blessed me, I need to give some back to God and do good with this. He said, you know what, I'm going to build me bigger storehouses. I'm going to build my barns bigger, and then I'm going to sit back and retire. I'm going to sit back, eat, drink, and be merry. Of course, what happens in the parable? The Lord came to him that night, said, you fool, this night your soul will be required of you. And what good will all those possessions that you have be? Something to think about when we ask ourselves, why am I saving? We seriously need to give consideration to that. There's godly reasons to make preparations for the future. We save so that we can control our lives. Now, don't misunderstand me when I say that, because that's one of those expressions. There are some people who they want to control their own lives and they don't want God to have any part of it. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we save so that we are in control of what's going on in our lives. So that when an emergency happens, we can take care of that emergency without having to be a burden to somebody else. So that we have the resources available to help somebody who has a need. And say you know a brother in Christ who wants to go preach the gospel overseas for a month or two. And he's seeking support. It's a worthy cause. Have you got something set aside so that you might be able to help that individual so that he can go preach the gospel and you can have fellowship with him in that labor? That's just an example of what I'm talking about, good works. How many would love to do those types of things, but they're hindered because they've misused what they have now? And that's the point. You know, there's some people who you live day by day, and that's not wrong within itself, unless living day by day involves waste and squander and irresponsibility. So, saving, it gives us the ability to take care of others. And isn't that what Galatians 6 and verse 10 says, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith? Let me give you another passage here. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse number 16. 1 Timothy 5 and verse number 16. This comes at the conclusion of a passage where Paul is dealing with widows. And he talks about in verse number 8 about how a man is to take care of his own household, and if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever, verse 8. Then he goes on and describes those whom the church can help. But then in verse 16 he says, if any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened that it may relieve those who are really widows. And that goes back to the question, is are we saving so that we won't be an undue burden to others? Something to think about. Another principle is to keep in mind when we are saving, looking toward the future, is our treasure still in heaven? Is that still ultimately what our goal is? And incidentally, and I just kind of thought about this as I was getting ready to come up here. You want to know the ultimate example of savings? Matthew 6, verse 19 through 21. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Sounds like a savings account, doesn't it? Spiritually speaking. So you have there the example of that. But what I'm saying in this is, as we are looking to make sure that we're able in the future to take care of ourselves and perhaps to help others as we have opportunity to do so, never forget that the things of this world are things of this world. Would we be willing to surrender our earthly savings accounts for a home in heaven? I believe there was an account about that, like, say, Matthew 19, where a young man, a ruler, comes to Jesus and says, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? To make a long story short, Jesus says, give away everything you have and come follow me. And the reason he said that wasn't so much that he needed a vow of poverty, but possessions meant too much to him. They meant more than serving God. It was an obstacle to his getting to heaven. So we need to think about that when it comes to saving. And basically, I guess the point that I'm making in all of this, it's not about saving, it's about why, and it's about how much. Can we save too much while there is work that needs to be done that is not being done because the support is not there? Have you seen churches that have had huge bank accounts that just hold on to it? It's like they're keeping a storehouse so that when the Lord comes back, they're going to give him this big bundle of money. And then when a preacher writes asking for support, no. Now, we realize there's responsibility associated with that. But you understand the point that I'm making. So think about that. Where is our treasure? As we conclude this portion of our study here, I'm still reminded of Proverbs 30, verses 8 and 9. Solomon toward the end, give me neither poverty nor riches. What he's saying there is, I don't want to be too rich and I don't want to be too poor. I want to have just enough. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Which is what the rich often do. Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Give me enough that I may be content, that I may live satisfied with what I have, and enough to not be a burden to others. So that's what we find that the Bible says concerning the subject of savings. Now that just leads to a couple of other questions that we want to just spend a few moments with, and then we'll go ahead and conclude this lesson. What about the subject of investing? You know, associated with savings, you have questions about retirement accounts. You know, there are some who say, you know, should you save up for retirement? You know, should you ever retire? Or they might ask the question, you know, how much should I invest? And there are some who say that a Christian shouldn't invest in the stock market because it's gambling. the expression that they'll use. Or they'll talk about how it is greed-driven. And again, you're not showing trust in God. You're putting your trust in gambling in the ways of this world instead of trusting in God. Well, there could be something to be said about all those things. But investing per se, saving up for retirement, planning to retire one day, that's not wrong. There's nothing in scriptures that says such a thing would be wrong. The way I would view investing is, in reality, it's a form of savings. I want you to think about, again, the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. You know, we mentioned a few moments ago the one talent man who was described as wicked and lazy, and the master said, well, at least you should have put it in the bank. At least it would have drawn interest. Why do banks give out interest? Because they invest, right? Well, I want you to also think about this. What about the five-talent man and the two-talent man? What did they do with the five talents and the two talents while the master was gone? Did they invest it in one way or another? You know, we're not told exactly how, but somehow they doubled it. That means that they were making decisions. They might have been buying things and selling things at a profit. But that's a form of investment. So you have there an example of investing. But the key that we ask is, we just need to ask the question, why? Are we being responsible? What are my motives behind the investments that I am making? Am I investing for material reasons? Am I investing because I want a bigger house? I want a nicer car? I want to live in a better neighborhood? I want to send my kids to the more expensive schools. I want a higher social status in life. I want to be viewed as more successful by the world and those around me. Is that why you're investing? Or are there other reasons? Is God a part of the foundation of my plans when it comes to investments? And that's really the question that we want to ask ourselves there. You know, just as with savings, why am I doing this? Am I saving because I want to be able to help God in the future? Am I investing so I want to be able to help God in the future? Am I saving up so that I can retire? So that I can retire from serving God as well? Or do I want to retire one day so that I can do more for God? I'm not... just, you know, some people, they say that's what they're going to do. I'm talking about that's your real motive. I want to be the one who goes overseas when I retire and for a couple of months goes to another country and helps them preach the gospel. That's a noble goal. It's an example. What do you plan to do with your retirement? Sit around and play cards? Or further the cause of the kingdom? Those are things to really think about when it comes to why we invest. And something else that we as Christians need to ask ourselves, and I think that this is important, is what am I investing in? I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. The stock market and other forms of investment are not just investing in godly ventures. They're also investing in immorality. I think I read somewhere a while back that pornography is one of the largest industries in America. It makes more than sporting events in this country. You know what? There's people that invest in companies that produce pornography. Sometimes it's not veiled as this is the company producing the X-rated movie, but maybe it's got a parent company and that's one of the things it's involved in. What about companies that are supporting same-sex marriage agendas? Planned Parenthood, which is nothing but a support pro-arm for abortion? What about corporations that are supporting those? Are you investing and making money off of those types of companies? Do you know what you're investing in? That's really the question, right? Isn't that something we should think about? You may get a bigger return because we're living in an ungodly society, and there's a lot of money to be made in alcohol and legalized drugs, marijuana, and pornography, and Hollywood, and other industries. There's a lot of money to be made in those industries. But are you going to support industries that promote ungodliness? Maybe we ought to think about what we invest in when we invest. Just some things to give thought to. Well, what about asking the question, is investing gambling? You know, when you put money in a stock market, you're taking a risk. But there's a big difference between gambling and investing. And it has to do with the outcome. What is the purpose of gambling? Just to give a quick summary of this, the purpose of gambling is for you to win while others lose. That's what gambling is about. You have a pot. Somebody wins the pot, somebody loses the pot. You want to win. And it's based on a game of chance of some sort. Responsible investing, everybody benefits as a result of it. And that's really the point. So let's just give consideration to that. All involved profit as a result of it. So it's not the same thing as gambling. But that doesn't mean that there are not responsibilities that we need to give consideration to. And then, of course, there's the question of insurance. And more than anything, we're talking about life insurance here, you know, and how much life insurance you ought to have, those types of things. Again, some say that insurance shows that you don't trust God. Well, also, a failure to carry insurance can put yourself in a situation where you unduly burden others when you don't have to. Which is why there are certain instances where the law requires that we carry insurance. If you drive a car, you better have insurance or you're breaking the law and you're sinning. Health insurance is going to be mandatory. So, just accept it. It's going to happen. But what about life insurance? Again, we need to just think responsibly. What are we looking at when we are providing life insurance? How much are we looking at providing? You know, we mentioned this morning Jesus on the cross, one of the sayings of Jesus, behold your mother, behold your son, John 19, 26 and 27. Jesus was basically looking at John and Mary, his mother, and he asked John to help take care of her. And it says in verse number 27, went and looked at this afternoon, it says that she went into his house after that. He took care of her. So you have that there. Jesus made provisions for his mother. That right there is the authority to do what you need to do to make provisions for your family if something happens to you. But there are some other things that I want us to think about. Can you go overboard? Is it possible to go overboard with insurance? Is it possible that you're worth more dead than alive? I mean, think about that. You know, these people that carry these $1 million life insurance plans. And I want you to think about some principles on this. Turn to 1 Timothy 5. 1 Timothy 5 again. 1 Timothy 5 and verse number 11. Father says, refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying that which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. I want you to notice what Paul says there. In certain circumstances, it's better for some people to just move on and live their lives and take care of themselves as opposed to let somebody else take care of them. Can a nest egg, an inheritance, cause somebody to be irresponsible if it's too much? Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and we'll wrap up with this. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. This is Solomon in his search for the meaning of life. And you find in verses 18 through 21, where he talked about he sought resources and he sought to find happiness in things. And he says, "Then I hated all my labor." This is verse 18, Ecclesiastes 2. "I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore, I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor of which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil." Is it possible that you could leave so much for your children and your family that they become lazy because they don't have to work anymore? Just something to think about. And that's really been the point of this lesson in dealing with these things. In all that we do, we have to put God first. And we need to think about it. It's designed to help us think about the money we have been entrusted with, the resources that we have been blessed with in this prosperous nation. We can use it wisely. And we can make wise decisions thinking about our families, thinking about what is best for them spiritually first, and then doing what is necessary to help them physically so that they can do that which is spiritually good. Or we can let our resources control us. The question is which? And thus I conclude by asking, am I being a godly steward? Something to think about. Lesson's yours.